workshop meeting.
I believe Mr. Glenn is going to do the invocation.
Most Heavenly Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for everything that you do for us. Thank you this time that we as leadership and get to come together for this town. I pray that you open our minds as we take this information in, that we'll be able to use it in a way that will glorify you and help this town and help ourselves. Be with the ones that aren't here, they're traveling today. Make sure that they get home safely. If you would just take care of people that are sick. We ask the things in Christ's name, amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Certification of
quorum. I certify a quorum.
All right, well, the mayor, I think all you know, is in Columbia today advocating for funding through the Rural Infrastructure Authority for the sewer authority, so he isn't able to be here. Yusuf, you said maybe on his way, may not.
He may. I just sent him a message, and I haven't received anything back yet, but he just got back from surgery around noon today.
Well, we invited General Manager of PMPA, Andy Butcher, to come in and do a very brief workshop. Andy probably could speak to you all for a better part of a couple of days and still have plenty to talk about. We've scheduled it for about an hour, but this is for you all to, as you hear things that spark your curiosity or things that you'd like to know. Andy is here. Mike Frazier is also. Mike, I've been calling you the operations manager all day. Is that more or less what you're?
It's director of engineering and technology.
Okay. Yeah. So these two guys can probably answer any questions that you have today. So Andy, with that, we'll turn it over to you, and thank you and Mike for making the drive over.
Well, thanks for having us. Any opportunity to speak to you is something. So if there's questions, I mean, my intent is it's a work session, so it kind of looks like presentation, but it doesn't have to be that way, so stop me at any time. We were trying to make this, there's a lot of slides here, but our goal was to get it done in 40 minutes, so you'd have 20 minutes of questions, so totally up to you. Stop me at any time. I will apologize. Recently, I've been here about a year and a half, and I moved from out west, and this time of year, allergies really affect me. I actually lost my voice this morning, but spent all afternoon drinking tea to get it back. So if it starts to crack apart again, I'm sorry. But evidently, something's blooming right now. So I'll do the best I can. Which is awful, because I like to talk. But what we're going to provide you is a presentation that it covers a lot of areas. The first thing it's really going to cover really is who we are, what the industry looks like around us, what types of utilities there might be. Of course, Westminster is a municipality in our greater scheme of electricity, but we'll talk about some of the others. So brief history, we'll talk about the resources that we use to serve the load here. We'll talk about the contracts that we have. We will delve into a rate strategy that's been board approved over the years. We will show you a breakdown of the rates that have been in the books for a while, and then we'll actually show you outcomes of rates since 2015. At the end, we'll go through some services. So we provide electricity. That is our biggest requirement. To do that as best we can, making sure that we keep economics in mind, making sure that it's reliable, and making sure it's environmentally friendly. We do that, but there's a lot of other services that sometimes get left aside, and there is money that is provided to the cities from PMPA that we want to make sure that you're aware of. Let's get started. I show you that the cities that are the founders and members and owners of PMPA, there's 10. I always like to say, and I always use, I give a lot of speeches, and I always say Westminster, because I say we go all the way from Rock Hill to Westminster, and that is the case. If you think about it, that's a long way, right? It's a long way across the top of the state. We go as south as Newberry, and so we really cover generally the entire upstate of South Carolina. We made some trips last week, and we were actually here for a presentation talking about some future issues, and I think we put in 800 miles to visit all the members last week. So even though South Carolina is not a huge state, and even though the upstate is small, it's really big when you actually look at it on the map and have to drive it. So those are the members that we have. What is PMPA? And PMPA clearly says we are a joint action agency. We were formed in 1979 by the members together to be joint action. So what is a joint action agency? And there's about 42, give or take, and that actually number I believe is still accurate across the entire United States. And so a joint action agency is a group of like organizations, and in our realm, municipalities, joining together for power supply. The co-ops also do the same. You will see joint action agencies that help manage co-ops. So throughout the co-op world, in the municipal world, there is 42 joint action agencies. They really form us for this very reason, and it really makes a lot of sense here in Westminster. You're the smallest member we have. If you were to manage the power supply by yourself alone, it would be very difficult. And your seat at the table with the utility such as Duke would be very small. So the concept is that we join these cities together as one action, and we advocate together, we manage the load together, and with all the cities together, we're much bigger. We're nowhere near as big as the co-ops in the state. We are nowhere as big as, of course, the investor-owned utilities in the state, and I'll show you some of those in a minute. But it gives us a much bigger voice whenever there's issues in front of the state that we need to advocate for. Our meter count across all cities is approximately 120,000 meters. Even though we were formed in 79, we did not provide wholesale electric service until 1985. And really where that really comes from is PMPA was really designed in the beginning to provide, and I'm going to talk about it here in another slide, is to provide energy from the Catawba Station, which is a nuclear power plant that is near Rock Hill. We were a part of that being built, and we're an owner. So we were formed at that time to be able to provide that electricity to the 10 members that took service from that facility. But the actual wholesale service started in 1985. So let me just back up a little bit and talk about utilities, just so we're on the same grounds of who we are compared to the people around us. One type of utility you will hear a lot of, because they are the biggest in the country, is an investor-owned utility. They have stockholders. Their goal in life is to provide electric service just like we do, reliably, as cost-effectively, and environmentally friendly. We all say that. But they have stockholders, too. So I used to work for one, so I've had some experience. They have their customers and their stockholders. So when they figure out what their costs are, they go to regulating bodies, such as the PSC here in South Carolina, and they ask for rate changes, and generally their rates are, here's my cost, and I want to earn 8%, 9%, 10%, whatever the state will allow. That's how these organizations function and how their rates are created. And when you look at it, there's about 193 investor-owned utilities providing electric service in this country. And you'll see there's a lot more municipalities. The difference is the investor-owned utilities are huge. Duke Energy, of course, one of the biggest ones in the country, is a good example of that. So even though there's only 193 of them, 68% of electricity is provided by these organizations. The next organization, of course, we'll talk about is a rural co-op. And of course, Blue Ridge Co-op is surrounds you, and that's a good example. They don't have stockholders. They have a board. They have some similarities of municipalities. They have a board, and they have to answer to a board. In general, they do not respond to the PSC, but in some cases, rural co-ops are regulated by PSCs in some states. There's 873 approximately in the country, which is about 13% of the customers. municipal electric systems, and that's Westminster is one of these 2006 across the United States. So a municipality is probably the foundation of electricity systems back when electricity was starting. The cities provided electricity, and there used to be a lot more, and over time some of them have disappeared. Municipalities are about 15% of the customers in the country. So IOUs here in the state, and I've talked about it a little bit already. Of course, you got Duke and Dominion, and a very small one, Lockhart Power. Those are the three investor-owned utilities that operate in South Carolina. When we look at co-ops, there's about 20 of them. So there's quite a few of those too, and they're very big also. Central, which is an organization that manages power supply for a lot of co-ops, I mean, they really do have a large foothold in the state, the co-ops do. I got to mention Santee Cooper, even though Santee Cooper kind of doesn't fit in any mold. But Santee Cooper is a utility that you probably heard of in the news before, of course. It is a state-owned organization formed by state government, which so is PMPA. They're very similar to us, and they serve co-ops, and they also serve municipalities across the state. And I will show you that one of our agreements that we serve your load with is through Santee Cooper. They're a big, big player of utility in the state. Munis, 21 of us in the state. There's a couple really close to here. Of course, we have Westminster, and Seneca is also one. And so throughout the entire state, you have 21. And most of them purchase their power from different places. Generally, Santee Cooper is a big organization that provides power to municipalities, Progress Energy, Dominion. And so most of the munis are getting their power from multiple places. Our 10 members of the 21 receive it from PMPA, and I will show you how we supply that. It's always good to say that the history is long, but the cities of Greenwood and Newberry, just out of perspective, was created in 1896. And then, of course, Newberry and Union, the two other utilities, 1898. So many electric systems have been around for a long time. So let's talk about how we manage power supply for our 10 member owners. Our participants all have a share of ownership from Catawba Nuclear Station. Catawba has two shafts, and so there's really two generators there. But in total, if you know 2,200 plus megawatts is generated in that facility. Of course, there's nuclear power. It's been producing electricity since 1985, and I know it's eye-popping, and it says the original cost was $3.5 billion. I can't even imagine what that would cost today. I imagine there's another digit in front of that three. The question is it one? Maybe. Very, very expensive to build today, and there really hasn't been a successful build of a nuclear power plant for quite a long time. The beauty of this facility is that our current license runs through 2043. I would say that if you were to walk into that plant, it doesn't look like it was built in 1985. It looks like it's brand new. We have invested a lot of money over time. Most components within the Catawba Nuclear Station have been replaced. So most all major components have either been replaced or upgraded. So physically, right now, today, it has a license through 2043. Duke Energy, which I've talked about, which operates the plant, has told us over and over again this plant will eventually be relicensed into the 2060s. Who owns this facility? There really is four owners. We have the North Carolina Municipal Power Agency is a large owner. The North Carolina Electric Membership Corporation is an owner. Piedmont Municipal Power is an owner, and so is Duke. Our ownership in this facility, we own 25% of Unit 2. That is our direct ownership. And that basically equates to an ownership of capacity of around 277 megawatts. Now, it's not enough to serve our whole load, and I'll show you what we do to solve that equation. So we may move on. Any questions on Catawba? That's the biggest thing out there as far as power supply that we provide for you. I already talked about this. This is the ownership in percentages.
How's that determined?
How is that determined?
You know, back in the day, back in the early, probably in the 1970s when they were talking about building it, Duke Power was probably out soliciting, trying to find people to buy in so they could share the cost of the facility. And at that time, everyone said, here's how much I wanted, and they made an agreement for it. So just an agreement of what they needed and what they were willing to pay for. Because if you wanted to be a part of this back then, you had to figure out how much of $3.5 billion you wanted to be a part of.
Right.
So I always found it interesting that Duke is, you know, not the smallest, but you know, they're a smaller owner. Most of the power here goes to North Carolina. But of course, the entire facility supports the electric load across both states. But I can't exactly tell you how they decided. But generally, what you would do is look at what your need is and what you could afford. And they made an agreement amongst the four of who would buy what. And I would say at the time, there were probably other members that were talking about it, but never signed on. There were some municipalities that backed out at the last moment. So let's talk about our power supply diversity, because if I told you that our power came from Catawba Unit 2, that would be scary, because sometimes these units stop working instantaneously, and you have no power supply, and nobody wants to be in that position. Everybody expects that when you hit the switch, the light just come on. It's just a thing that we have become used to in the United States, is that that needs to work. And so we need to make sure that we have diversity to ensure that at least on the supply side, that is the case. The wires, of course, which you, Kevin and his team works here, he has the same issues and make sure that that's available. But if those wires are available, I better have electricity to give to you so we can have power. So the first thing is we have different parts of the supply. All of our members receive an allocation from what we call SEPA, or Southeastern Power Administration. That clearly is the federal government, and it's from hydros and dams across the area, so it is hydropower. It is a clean, carbon-free supply of energy, and that constitutes about 5% of our load. So it's not a large player, but what we know is it's reliable and it is clean energy. It's a good part of our portfolio. The other thing that we do is we have two exchange agreements. We have a Catawba exchange agreement, and we have a McGuire exchange agreement. McGuire is another nuclear power plant that has two shafts. So if you take the two shafts at Catawba and the two shafts at McGuire and you add it together, there is four nuclear power plants that are pretty close together. We have an agreement with all of the owners of these shafts to share together. And so in general, even though we own 25% of one, one quarter of the supply comes from each shaft. So if one shaft is not available, we only lose a small part of our ownership at the time. So it makes us a lot more reliable and diverse to ensure that power is available. What happens, let's say the Catawba Unit 1 did come offline, 25% of our power supply is now not available. And so what do? We have an agreement with an organization called the Energy Authority, or TEA, and they are based in Jacksonville. And they have a large control room, and whenever we need power because of an outage, they go out to the market, they secure that, they deliver it to us, and it makes up for what we do not have. The other question is, okay, Catawba is a part of your supply, which is a big part. How do you meet the rest of your load? We have an agreement with Santee Cooper, and we call that the supplemental agreement. And Santee Cooper provides us capacity to serve our load with the energy that's associated with that as we need it. So generally, a day like today, I guarantee you we are taking power from Santee Cooper because it's hot and loads are higher. In the winter when it's cooler, we're probably not using Santee Cooper. So they give us power when we need it, but we do not have to take it unless we need it. It's a big part of our power supply. And I'll talk a little bit more about that contract here in a minute. The other is there is some small purchases that we actually work with the member cities, because some cities have generators behind the meter that can be used at critical times when we need them. That is how the power supply is supplied to all of our members. Let's draw a line of our load, and this can be a very complicated thing here, so I apologize, but this is what we call a load duration curve. And a load duration curve is designed to show your capacity needs throughout the entire year, and how many times is the load high enough that you need different supplies. And so if you go clear to the left side, that is a time in which our loads are actually highest. So this load duration curve says that the load that we serve, and it says excluding union, and I'm probably not going to get into that today. That's probably another hour conversation. But all of our cities besides Union, we expect that sometime during the year they're going to need 519.7 megawatts. And so we need to draw a way that that is served. When you start to look at it as you come down, sometimes we don't need that much. And so this load duration curve tells us one thing. How do we serve it, and do we have excess, or are we short? And so based on the resources that we have, we have covered the highest load. And the green that you see, that's that Santee Cooper supplemental energy that is needed part of the time. And so if you take straight down off that green line, we only need Santee Cooper about 35, 36% of the time. If you look at the blue, that's Catawba. We use it 100% of the time. That's what you call base load. So Catawba fills almost all of our needs all year round. And when we have a peaking event such as today, Santee Cooper supplies it. The thing that this load duration curve tells me when I look at it, if you look at the red, and red's a great color because it can be an issue, is sometimes we have too much energy and we have to sell it to the market. And so we generally are covered for what we need, but many of the times, and you can see almost 35% of the time or 32% of the time, we have energy to sell, that we do sell to the market and we are paid for that. So does that make any sense? That's called a load duration curve, if you ever heard that before. It's used across the entire industry to help plan to make sure that the load can be met. There's many other ways to do it, but it's just a good graphic way to see it. So here's our supply mix. And it kind of goes with that load duration curve. We have a lot of nuclear power from Catawba. We have purchased power, which is the Santee Cooper or TEA at times. And we have the Federal Hydro. When you dissect this, there is something that it is telling me that maybe has not been as important in the past, and maybe it's not as important to some people, but in this country, this is something very important to a majority. We have over 90% carbon-free energy. So generally, the power that is generated that serves this city, only 9% of the time creates carbon. There's not hardly any utilities in this country that can say that. And I would say that most utilities are striving to do this. And they find that in today's world, that their costs will escalate very quickly to get to this point. And so we're there, and one would say maybe we have more carbon-free energy than we need. I think people would debate that all day long, and I'm not really here to do that. But we have a portfolio that right now that the federal government may someday require all utilities to do, which would cost a lot of money to do. We're already there, which I think is an accomplishment, but you know, being carbon free, it can be costly. And we've been carbon free almost since the beginning. I don't think we were completely carbon free because we kind of stepped into it, but for a long time we've been 80 to 90% carbon free. And a lot of people say that, you know, that's just a political thing. And we can debate that all day long, too. But what I know and what I would say to anyone is that climate change has progressed past, I believe, politics.
Hello, it's 95 degrees outside right now.
Yes. Most people believe that in some form climate change is real. So we're in a position to protect ourselves if more restrictions on carbon production. So why did we purchase this unit, and why do we have the portfolio that we do today? Nobody in this room, I believe, sat at the table when that decision was made. The people that were on the board or in the cities are generally off somewhere else. They're not here to answer that question. But what we believe is to make sure that there was an adequate, dependable power supply that was reliable. At the time, the cities were taking their power supply directly from Duke. And Duke had basically told everyone the power cost between now and 20 years from now were going to escalate exponentially. And so the cities wanted to have more control of that cost to avoid what Duke was telling them. And so they joined into the Catawba project to manage wholesale costs. And at the end of the day, manage the risk together, which is what joint action agencies do. So that's what I would theorize they would say, and our research says that's why we did what we did. Let me just give you a quick timeline. 1976, there was legislation that created us that allowed us to become. In 1979, that's when we actually became PMPA as an organization. We worked in contracts with the 10 cities and Duke, Duke at the time. And in 1985, basically, we went out and that was our share. You can see it's a real big number, $1.1 billion of tax-exempt bonds to build the Catawba Nuclear Power Plant. In 1985, that station began to produce energy and provide energy to the cities that were member participants. When we talk about our contracts, and the blue is, of course, where the rubber hits the road, you see PMPA in the center. We have extensive agreements with Duke because Duke operates Catawba, so there's all kinds of operation agreements to make sure that that occurs. We have these agreements I talked to you at the bottom, the exchange agreements, the backstand, the Santa Cooper supplemental. That comes into our bucket. But what we push out to the participants is that they have two agreements with us. They have their Catawba project sales agreement, which currently today, those agreements run through 2035. The actual facility will be here past that, but right now those agreements are 2035, and that's their termination date. Supplemental power supply agreement, that agreement actually has a varying date of expiration at this point. All 10 members have given notice to get out of that part of the agreement, and I believe that Westminster would be out of that agreement at the end of 2028.
Well, yeah.
2028. The bulk of the members are out in 2029. So when I say out, they're out of that agreement. You still got to get something on power supply. That's something we've been working on. So that's probably a 2-hour meeting in itself. But
I have a quick question.
Absolutely.
You guys had a $1.1 billion bond. That was your purchase power in Catawba?
That is what we had to pay in capital to be an owner of that facility back in that time frame. So tax bonds is what paid the tax-free bonds.
So you didn't actually pay that much for you paid this portion of 1.1, because that doesn't equal 25% of the plant. It's 3.7 billion. That's what I was wondering. You said everyone paid their share for the plant? The street,
yeah,
some building.
I don't know. I don't know if Mike, you know those.
We also funded a rate stabilization fund.
Right, okay. There's supposed to be something else added.
I'm not sure what all the money was for, okay. But I mean, there's also cost to do bonds, and I'm sure that's part of that number too. So there's a lot of money invested in that's not just paying for the plant, but that's what it took to build the plant.
Yeah, because almost a third of the money was that, but they got 68% of the cost in $4 billion. I mean,
which is a lot.
The math doesn't.
And actually, it could be more than that, because some of those entities probably couldn't have used tax-free bonds. Our value was they were tax-free. And I've got this question asked many a times, and I believe that your mayor's asked the question, and it is a great question. So I will ask it for him, and I will answer it for him. If you paid $1.1 billion back then, why do you still, and today we own less, or we owe less than $700 million? Why do you still owe that much? At the beginning, we really did not pay off that. We pushed it out until we grew into the plant. We really only started paying off the capital of that facility maybe 10 years ago, and we've really escalated how that's paid for. And right now, we still owe, as an organization, slightly less than $700 million. That will be paid off in 2035. So in 2035, under the rate schedules we have today, that'll be paid off. It'll be paid for. Numbers don't make sense if you think about why was it one. It's just there was a period of time where we weren't actually paying down the debt.
Is there a reason for that? I'm not trying to be like offensive. I'm curious.
I think a lot of it had to do with the day that it started. And Mike, if you got an answer to this, you can surely chime in. When they first started, we were not using the whole facility.
Okay.
And so Duke was using it. And so at that time, we didn't have the ability to pay down the debt.
Okay.
And so until we grew into the facility, we, of course, we were paying something, but we weren't able to pay enough. So as we grew, as the cities grew, and we used more of it, then we were able to pay it.
Okay.
It's a quandary, right?
It is, yeah.
But financially, if you're not using it, it's hard to pay for it. We were able to continue to pay the debt, but paying it off was harder. But now, today, it's a different schedule.
It's kind of like being able to make your minimum payment and not paying anything on the
principal. Yeah, it's probably a good way.
Well, for some years, we did refinance some of that debt that actually lowered our debt service. The amount stayed the same, but our debt service, we had lower payments.
Okay.
The other beauty of it is here recently, we refinanced the entire debt. Because, of course, if anyone, maybe it's changed now, but over the last few years, rates have really been reduced.
Right.
We pretty much refinanced that entire debt to very low rates, and it really is a big change. And over the time between now and 2035, it will have reduced our cost by well over $60 million in just debt costs. So
in 2035 is when you expect to have the debt paid off?
We paid off.
That's
it. 13. The beauty of it is, though, that between now and then, we're at such a low rate that we could probably never reduce that finance cost, because a lot of our rates are sub one, and they're that cheap,
okay.
Which is a good thing. So we took care of that last year. Any more questions? It's a good question.
I
always get that question, so that's...
I'm new at this gig, so...
The debt is a big deal. You're going to see that's the biggest part of our cost. It's coming up in a slide, so... So how are things today? So now we're going to get into that slide where I showed you how big that debt is. This is our budget for 2022. Our budget is $247 million. Westminster is part of that debt, and we'll eventually show you how much you pay us in a given year. But this is in total. If you see, the debt service is 36% of the costs that we charge. Of course, the next biggest cost is what it costs to run the plant, and that's 28% of our cost. The supplemental is 20%. And then you have some other associated costs, such as capital additions, because in order to keep the plant new, things have to be changed. That's not a big part, but it's a part of it. There's other additions within the agency, a lot of different charges. And one of the big ones that I think is important to always mention, 4% of your cost is decommissioned. So I've had congressmen ask the very question, what are you going to do about that? We're already prepared. We have a very large bank account for decommissioning. So what we don't want to do, and what the government will not allow us to do, so it is a requirement by the federal government to have an account of such. With a nuclear power plant, you have to invest in an account to decommission. So the day that this plant retires, 2060 or whatever it is, the money to pay to decommission that plant will already be in the account to pay for it. We hope that it's enough. Every so often we reevaluate to make sure that we're depositing enough, but the cost of decommissioning is not something the city generally would have to bear unless we've made a large mistake on the cost. But we continue to evaluate that. So sometimes that isn't mentioned enough, but it's a really big part of what we do.
But logically, in 13 years, you'd reevaluate because you're going to lose 36% when you lose that debt service.
As far as the decommissioning, I think we reevaluate that on a three-year basis.
Okay.
Because it's so critical that we have enough money to decommission the plant. That okay. We have to reevaluate
okay.
it. Very important thing to do. That makes sense? That is, you see, our budget for this year. I can always go back if you've got questions as we go. So I want to step into rate objectives. And so these rate objectives were things that the board discussed over the years. And so how do we create a rate? And I just want to go to number six, because I think it's important to make a statement here on this. Is when we look at rates, we take the costs that we incur, which you see what they are. You saw what they are this year. And the rate structure that is designed was intended to ensure that not one member was advantaged or disadvantaged more than 10% in the rate. So in general, when you look at our rates, across all the cities, they're all within plus or minus 10% of each other. So there is not one city that has a cost from PMPA. And when I talk about this, this is the cost that you pay PMPA, not maybe the cost that you charge your customers, but the cost that we charge you. We try to keep those 10 cities somewhat equal in cost. And so we do that through a rate design. And so then we go back up to the top. Of course, we got to cover our costs. If our costs are the $247 million that you see, we have to recover that. We are a not-for-profit subdivision of the state, so we have to be funded based upon what our costs are in our rates. Number two is that fair and reasonable. And so that's why number six is there. Is we can talk about our costs, but in general, we have costs, and we want to make sure that all of our members have a fair and reasonable amount of that. Those are probably the biggest parts of this rate design that I think is important. You know, can we attract and retain customers? We have some, we've had economic development rates in the past. We have structures to help. It's always been a part of the So let's talk about the billing components. And this is the current rate as you see it today. So if you were to look up our rate, this is what you pay. And so we have a base billing demand. And that really is based upon a monthly basis of how much you needed. Not how much energy you use, but how much at a peak time you would need. And so we charge you a base billing demand. And it's based upon a certain load that we expect you to need. If you go above that, then there is an additional demand of billing. So once we take care of what we have to make sure that you need, then we talk about the actual energy that is used. So there's two parts, demand of and energy. And so once we figure out the demand, then we charge an energy charge based upon KW rate that you see. And the same thing there is based on a certain amount that we expect. If it's higher and your needs were higher, there would be an additional charge. Let's talk a little bit about your bill. So this is the 2021 bill. And we can, some, there's a lot of numbers here. Demand charge per month, basically $150,000 or $1.8 million. As you move down, the actual charges before you get to the additional charge that we talked about was $2.2 million last year. When you add in all the additional above what we expected numbers, $2.6 million. So basically last year, we billed you approximately $2.6 million. Now, during that year, and we'll show you a chart here in a second, we actually gave you a billing credit. So the board voted to provide cash back. So even though we charged you $2.6 million, we gave you $382,000 back last year. Does that make sense?
What was that number again that you gave back?
$382,144. It's okay. You're listening. That's good.
I was.
I know. That's good. I got more slides on the rate, so maybe it'll come even more clear here. So let's talk about the historical rates and projected rates. So in 2015, rates were increased by 4%. We have not had a rate increase since. No rate increase in 16, 17, 18, or 19. In 2020, we reduced rates by 5%. We did not have a rate increase in 21. We are not going to have a rate increase in 22. And at this point, and I say there's an if here, we do not project a rate increase through 26. I have no idea what inflation is going to do to us at this point. But what I would say is that we're well positioned try to make that happen, but there's no guarantees. And so why I say that is, right now, I can't really control financially what it's going to cost to run Catawba, and as inflation hits, prices will probably go up there. On the gas side of the business, so our supplemental contract with Santee Cooper, they use natural gas to provide electricity. And I don't know if anybody's been paying attention, it's very expensive right now. And it is not projected to reduce anytime soon. But I'm glad to report to you is that during this time, 80% of the gas prices that Santee Cooper uses are hedged. And so hedged means is that they paid a little extra all those years to ensure they did not have an increase. And so right now, if you looked, and I think it went down after I looked at it last, natural gas energy price for next month, and a unit of gas, it's a lot of gas. A unit of gas that a utility uses, almost $9. This right now with Santa Cooper is hedged at less than $4. So we have some protection. And so I think that we can fight the good fight and protect rate increases, and we'll continue to do that. And I think there's a good chance that we can. But how inflation affects us, I'm still saying the jury's out. And if it's a long time coming, it's going to be harder for our cost at Catawba. But on the natural gas through 26, we're in good shape. That's a good thing. What I would say is, when someone says, well, how much is $9 gas? Well, for the past decade, gas has averaged anywhere between $2 and $3. So it's 2 to 3 times higher for sure. And it's projected to stay that way. So we got a problem in this country if you're using natural gas to create electricity. But I think we are better prepared than most utilities, because the majority of our power comes from a nuclear power plant, and the gas is hedged through 26.
So you're not expecting a rate increase because of the hedging that Santa Cooper has done, right?
We were always projecting no rate increase because of a couple of things. Because we had a hedge, but also because we refinanced those bonds and we were able to save over $60 million that we could apply to stop it. So we had a lot of positive things coming. Now that inflation's here, it begins to worry us, because again, our goal is to have decreasing rates, not increasing rates. But right now, with the changes in the economy, I don't think you're going to find too many utilities in this country that are not raising rates. And I'm not saying that we won't, but what I'm saying is we have an opportunity to at least minimize that. And right now, we're still not projecting that. I mean, I'm pretty happy to say that even if we had a change, you know, we're not going to be raising rates until well into 2023 if we were wrong, which I don't think we are. I think we got some ability to fight this a little bit.
So, out of curiosity, I'm looking at the top, the historical plan. A 4% increase in 2015. You went 4 years with no increase, and then there was a 5% increase in 2020. How did that directly affect?
Your bills were lower.
2020 was a decrease, not an increase.
That's why I said 4%.
In 2020, whatever you paid in 2019, you paid 5% less.
Okay.
And you paid 5% less last year, and you're going to pay 5% less this year based upon 2019. So it is an effective decrease in what you pay, based on your 2019. So your rates were lowered 5% from 2019. So okay. If you paid less. Okay. Let me show you another chart that's gonna help build on this. Let's talk about something else, because I can't answer why. Sometimes projections are wrong. Generally, the one thing I will say in this business is that the day you make a projection, it's wrong. Who thought gas was gonna be $9 compared to $2 to $3? So in 2015, we started to see a good anomaly, I guess. Our cash balance was growing, and it was growing quickly. And so we probably projected rates wrong. That's why you see steady rates and declining rates, because our costs were getting cheaper, not more expensive. So costs from Catawba, which we expected to grow back in 2015, actually did the opposite, and it was reduced. And so not only did we reduce your rates, as you've seen, we also were providing cash back from our cash on hand each year. So the city of Westminster received from PMPA as a reduction of your bill these numbers that you see. And
that's
so in total,
that you were talking about.
Yeah. In total, since 2018, we have provided $140 million in cash back to our 10 municipalities. For Westminster, it's right at close to $2 million in money that you received. If you look at it a different way, because I had a hard time grasping this. I've worked for a lot of utilities. I've never seen a utility give cash back, and I'm not saying that's wrong. Generally, utilities fix this by changing rates. We had so much cash at the time that we needed to take immediate action. I'm pretty sure that's why it occurred. But let's look at what the effect was in percentage of your cost, because of that. That is important to see, I think. So in this chart, and this is as a whole, but Westminster's numbers are similar. In 2018, effectively, your costs were reduced by 9%. So in whatever you paid in 2017, effectively, the rate with the cash back, the cost that you received from us was 9% less. In 2019, 21% less. In 2020, 13% less. In 2021, 13% less. Now, I don't have 22 here because we're not done, but let's go back. We provided you 140. We will. You haven't received a penny of it yet, but by the end of the year, you will have received $147,000. Does that make sense? Effectively, it's a rate decrease, but it's not in the form of a rate decrease. It's a cash flow.
Can you explain to us why it dropped so much from 382 to 147?
Say that again.
Can you go back one chart?
Yeah.
So it says in 2021 we got 382,000. In 2022 we're only getting 147,000.
So
explain what the difference.
We have a cash on hand account. As a utility, we have to maintain a certain amount of cash to ensure that we can provide operations. And so we try to keep 200 days of operating cash on hand. And one would say, why do you need that money? Some utilities have more, some have less. Utilities that have more, their credit rating is better. Utilities that have less, their credit rating is garbage. But for us, 200 days keeps us at the level that we are, that we're comfortable. And so we calculate 200 days of cash, and over time we've tried to manage the money back, to manage that around 200 days. But again, you're projecting this almost a year in advance, and sometimes those projections do not work out. And so what you see is that some years, 2019, there was a lot of cash given back, and that was trying to get us back to that 200 days. But we didn't get it right, because utilities generally are conservative, right? When I look at numbers, if I try to cut it right to 200 and I'm wrong, I'm going to regret it. So we probably took baby steps, right? So when you get to 2021, we honestly thought that would be the last cash that we'd have available to give back. Well, this, you get into 2022, there's a question of some cash that was on hand, and it was 10.8 million. It says it right there, 10.8 million. That's the amount we give back. When we looked at that number, that's how much money, if we do not have a rate increase because of inflation, that's how much money was available to keep us within that number. The inflationary pressure can change that, but that's how those decisions made. So you try to target that 220 days cash on hand. So each year it's different because your view of it's different. Does that make sense?
So I want to interject here just for a second. So those credits are not a given. So there are 10 members at PMPA, and then there's the staff. What we have done here over that time period, going back to 2018 till now, when we look at your proposed budget that you have right now, you have a 5% utility rate or 5% transfer from the utility fund to the general fund. Well, that number has been higher. It's fluctuated up and down, which means as it's moved up and down, in the past here, we've used the utility transfer to fund things in the general fund that we wanted to have more of. Probably not the best way to do things, because what we have done over time is when we've had these credits, rather than stabilize our electric cost for our customers, we use those credits, the additional money we generated, we spent on things in the general fund. We did build, you heard Andy or Mike mention it a minute ago, they did rate stabilization. So you're just putting money aside, so if rates have to go up, you draw that money down first so that your rates don't have to go up as quick, as fast. So when you see that each year, that's based off the amount that's collected and then the amount the board is willing to give back. Now, Andy and his staff didn't advise against giving the credits back this year so that we could hold more of that cash on hand. All in all, not a bad thing. I advocated for it because we had actually balanced this year's budget anticipating that $382,000 participation credits to continue per month. You take that and divide it by 11, not 12, because you don't get the credit in January. We were expecting that to continue through the rest of the year, and it didn't. So in order to get some relief back, enough of us voted to get that 147 back, but you can see how the number keeps coming down. And what I would tell you as a council, we ought to stop expecting those credits, and we need to balance our budgets as if they're not there, and we need to keep as much money in the utility fund as we absolutely can. You, you have looked at financial policies that, that hold that 5%. You've got a budget this year that hold it to 5%, because those years that we could have stabilized our rates, we used it on the general fund side to pay for other things. You guys have seen how much work Lee and his group have done to clean the right-of-way, to upgrade the wires and the transformers and the poles and even the hooks, that I say hooks, all the accoutrements that go on that. That comes with a cost, and we were using the participation credits to pay for that.
Okay.
So as we've looked at next year, you've got a 5% transfer. You also have a 5% electric rate increase. That's to make up for the money that we have been receiving in credits but spending elsewhere. So
so we're cleaning up a house. Is
we're
what
doing
you're
some house cleaning right now. You're getting probably what I'm going to say is the second year, maybe the third, the second full year, part of the third year of that cleanup. I'll say a lot of that started when Lee put boots on the ground here and started getting your electrical system house in order. And that's, you got to keep the right of way, vegetation grows, it's growing right now. You got to keep the lines have got to stay upgraded. You got to keep the transformers replaced. You got to replace poles. All that stuff degrades with time. So as we keep looking, this is good news for us, but there's still some lifting to do on our side, because had I proposed to you in a budget what you needed to actually replace that, we would have needed a 15% increase, not a 5. Now, the way we were able to do it for the upcoming year, if you pass that budget, is we moved some of the electrical capital into that capital projects account. But next year, we won't have the ability to do that. We're going to have to come back to the electric and use the electric revenue that we generate from our customers to pay for those electric capital improvement projects, because we will have used that money already. So we started tightening things up. We get a little bit tight in the upcoming year, upcoming budget, and probably another 2 years we'll come out to the other side of that, and things will even out pretty well. Because I believe, Andy, when all the things that we've seen in the boardroom indicate that's going to pan out, with his caveats. You don't know what inflation's going to do. There's some other things.
Right.
But I trust Andy and the staff and the calculations they're running. But for us, that doesn't mean our rates are going to go down, because historically we've used that money for other things. It's not in our bank account. When Andy talks about 200 days cash on hand, you'll remember from our budget workshops, we've got 29 days. Now, we don't need 200. We're not in the same position that PMPA is to have to manage those assets and the credit rating. But it would be nice if we had at least 90 days in the bank.
Right.
It would be nicer if we had 180. So you'll see that we've got a way to chip away 3, 4, 5 days at a time each year to start building that amount up. So we're on our way, but we've got a few years of some small rate increases before we get there and level out. And if the economy continues to go bonkers and those go up, that means we're going to have to keep pace with that too, or else you're just not going to have enough money to manage the system here and pay the bill that comes from PMPA. That's the challenge for you. Thank you for listening. Any questions on that?
Okay.
I mean, that's
no, let me just marinate.
You guys got on council at a great time.
Thanks. I guess my biggest concern is, like, you know, everything y'all just said in all of your utility and budget and engineering talk, how do you communicate that to someone that's going, well, you're telling me you're not having to pay PMPA as much. I mean, is the right response that we're cleaning up some mistakes? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, I mean, it would be easy for me to call it a mistake. I would just say there was a different way of operating here before. It was a little bit looser. They used that transfer to pay for things that weren't utility related.
Right.
It was the prerogative of the decision makers at the time. Right or wrong, I won't say that.
Okay.
But they used the money that they could have put and reinvested into the system. Rate stabilization, keeping the assets current, making sure those lines were upgraded, you had good transformers, good poles. They didn't. They chose to pay for other things. It was their prerogative, just like it's your prerogative how to hand out the hospitality tax. You know, so I don't want to critique the people
I hear, I know.
But it's put us in this position that we have now.
Yeah.
And it's a little difficult right now.
Well, I kind of see it as like in my, I think about a family. Sometimes you get a bonus or you get a stipend, so you get this or that, and then you start counting on it as your everyday income. And then you don't get that. And then, you know, where all those kind of fit together. So I think that's kind of what happened. You know, we had some extra, so we used it here and there. And then that really, that funding source has gotten smaller. We want it smaller. We want our rates to stay stable, you know, so people aren't worried about them going up all the time.
It's kind of like we use.
I guess that's my concern, is like we're looking at 5% right now, right?
So to take.
But you said it.
Davies. Example a little bit more. It's like we use the stipend to buy a vote,
right?
And now we don't have the stipend, and we still have the vote payment.
Right. And I saw it said yesterday, just because you can make a payment doesn't mean you can afford it.
Correct.
You know, and so, and that's where we are. That's just and life as it is with inflation and everything else that's going on. So as a city, you know, I think that we've done a great job looking ahead to try to fix the house. You know. A step at a time, as painless as possible.
I think I could add one thing to help you a little bit. I talk to customers all the time about this. Is everyone's getting gas right now and buying groceries, right? How much more is it than it was a year ago? Well, imagine that when you're buying $1,000 transformers that are now $1,500 transformers.
Right.
And a pole that's $300 is now $600.
Right. Okay.
So I think if you take, if you had $1 million to spend 5 years ago on this system, you got $5 million work done. Compared to what you pay for now, it's just so much more sewer, water. I mean, it's exponentially, it was $38 a foot to put water line in, now it's $80 a foot.
Right.
I mean, that's the biggest thing. The money we have, we don't spend a lot more money, but we're trying to get more for it because it costs so much more for the material to get in the ground.
I hear.
So that's a good way to explain it to somebody. I just went to a person today about it. Your grocery, same bag of groceries is $100, you just get 3 bags. So it's the same thing for us, right? Everything costs so much more.
That helps, Lee. Thank you.
I'm going to turn it over to Mike so I can have a chance for my voice. He's only got a few slides. We talked about rates, costs. Let's talk about some other benefits that you guys received that you may not know.
So every year in the budget that you saw, there's also some funds that's available to each one of PMPA's members. This is what's in 2022 budget right now. There's economic development funds. Each city, all they have to do is write us a letter, tell us how it's going to be used, and we write a check. I'm assuming Westminster's probably done that.
Every year?
So, we got the check, I think, last month, Mike. Thank you very much.
So, and then we added this, we call it 12-5 account. That's basically anything in the electric department that you either, if you go to, there's what's called the ENO, the Engineering Operations Conference, with American Public Power Association. That's our national trade group. There's a national conference. There's a legislative conference they have in February. So it's anything that goes along with, you know, on the electric side, PMPA will reimburse those costs to you. There's a meter school that's held, it's actually in Kingston this year. So anything that is not APPA, you know, just have to ask PMPA if we approve it, and I don't think we've turned down much. So
we have historically used the 12-5 to train Lee's utility guy, or line guys.
Awesome.
So that they need lots of training, there's a lot of safety training that goes with it, it helps them increase their credentials, it helps our system, so that gets paid for there.
Right.
And this year, I think I told Andy, Davey and Audrey are going to the Power Conference.
Jimmy and Audrey.
Okay.
And I'm going to the other.
You're going to the municipal. Yeah. Okay, so we got those. So I think you'll learn a lot when you come there, but that's also, that's organized by these guys, and when we get there, you'll see just how much they teach us.
The South Carolina Economic Development Institute, I believe that's put on by the Commerce Department. That we pay $3,000 a year. It's basically a four-session class. You show up once a quarter. You get a certificate at the end. A lot of different cities have used that service. Basically, it trains you on how you can help promote economic development in your city. Of course, when you just mention the PMPA conference that we do, anybody you want to send is welcome to attend. And then we also do a scholarship fund. I know several cities use that. If you wanted to have some service like, you know, whether you need it for college scholarships or however you want to use it, we provide that.
What's that generally used for? Is it generally used for college scholarships?
The ones that have used it, that's what they've done with it. But, I mean, it could be however you decide, as long as it's some sort of scholarship program.
Right.
I don't think we know.
So we'll report to you that we've actually, the staff vets the applicants from West Oak High School, and if they're on our electric system, they're eligible, and then the best applicant, we typically try and give two $1,000 scholarships.
Awesome.
And Matt and Rebecca do that. Y'all have done that recently, haven't you? Mm-hmm. So we'll report that back to you that's been done. So that always goes to a West Oak High School kid or kids that are on our electric system.
Very cool.
And then to get in the more technical side of things, you know, as Andy described, this first bullet is what we do. We manage the Catawba output, the entitlement that for all 10 members, and make sure we deliver that power to the substations, to Westminster Substation. So far, we haven't failed with that. And then we definitely represent Westminster in all of our cities with Duke Energy, Southeastern Power Administration, or SEPA, the Federal Hydro folks. With Santee Cooper and any other utilities. We also provide transmission planning. Should Westminster ever need a second substation, you know, we will work with Westminster to develop a transmission line if that's not next to like an existing Duke transmission line. And then anytime that there's a, you know, if Westminster has a question about their service from Duke, you know, Westminster's the customer of PMPA, and PMPA's the transmission customer, too. So we're like the middleman there. Also, some less, I guess, critical things that we do. We provide load forecast every few years or as needed. PMPA uses load forecast itself. We have to forecast the load for each of our members. So when we do that, we provide that. There's a net billing program. Those of you who are solar customers, which I think y'all have six right now. So we manage that, keep tabs on everybody. We have an online home energy audit service provided by Apogee. That is, I don't know if that's on the website yet or not, but that's provided to each one of our members. Just last year, we did customer satisfaction surveys for six out of our 10 members. And then usually in December, we have an electric operations forum that we have and had a good turnout this last December. Specifically for Westminster, PMPA provides IT services for the city. This is a service that Westminster actually, PMPA recovers its exact cost from Westminster and another city that we perform this for, which is the city of Clinton. For Westminster, we manage all your servers, security cameras, users, any new users, we add those. VPN services, that's so you can make a virtual private network, is what that stands for, but that's a secure connection, so you can sit at home and connect back into the Westminster network securely. And then any desktop support you might need. I also manage cybersecurity software, system backup. So if your system were to go, if something were to happen to it, there are two sets of backups, both one here and one back at PMPA's site. And then the wireless access and the phone system also is managed by PMPA, not that phone.
And I want to make sure that y'all know how appreciative we are for that service, because we're small. And since I've been here, we did go out and look in the market, and we would be paying more if we weren't with PMPA. And within the last year, Andy and Mike and their staff have reorganized how we use our IT service. And we saved about $14,000 at the end of last year. And a lot of that is, if we don't need them to be here on site some weeks, we don't ask them to come. So they're able to do it virtually. And I give some of the credit to our staff because of the way we manage it. But just so you know, I haven't promoted this anywhere, but we have had substantial savings in that because of what they do on their side. It has been a great benefit.
It's good to have somebody, you know, we've had pretty much the same staff working with Westminster for a while. We had a dedicated person that was traveling the cities. That person's no longer there, but the people at PMPA have been there for quite a while, and so they know your systems in and out. And then the last thing I'll talk about is the Tantalus system. That is an advanced metering infrastructure platform, or AMI system. That allows for Westminster to be able to get meter readings from electric and water meters without actually having to go to the house and read those meters. And that's mostly in the electric footprint. Obviously, you have water meters, twice as many water meters out there that do have to be read. The actual server is hosted at PMPA. There's currently four utilities using PMPA server. And then several other cities also use Tantalus, but they have their own server. So it was decided when we put the system in that PMPA would pay for the infrastructure. So that means if you need a collector, which collects all these readings, or repeaters, like if you need several, you know, you can't read a certain meter, we'll pay for all those devices out there. And there's like seven of them, the white box, you probably never notice them when you drive by, but they're out there. And then the main reason we did this was for demand response. So several years ago, Westminster put on these switches on folks' houses. They control the air conditioning. And today, we are actually controlling those switches, cutting them off for 8 minutes, and they'll even run for 16 minutes, and then cycle them over again. And that helps Westminster lower their peak demand. And then with Tantalus, we also supply technical support, help answering any questions we can. If we can't answer them, we will go to back to Tantalus and help get those answers.
Those are the slides we have. Answer any questions that you have. Just want to kind of put something to what Mike just said. And you saw those services and that we provide for economic development and training and all those. It is not by the proportionate size of PMPA that you receive those dollars. Each city receives the same amount of dollars, so it's a significant value to you. The same dollars that you receive, that's what Rock Hill receives. So our biggest member receives the same amount you do. So I believe those are significant dollars to help you. There, of course, is always contention during budget time on those numbers. But in reality, when these numbers were decided upon, we'll use the economic development number as a discussion point, was each city had the same struggles, and so we felt the numbers should be the same.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
And so I fully support that, just so you know, and absolutely, we'll continue to try to push those dollars forward for you. The other thing that I would say is that I've been here a year and a half. My goal is to reduce budget, not increase budget. So last year we reduced the PMPA budget by almost $1 million. I'm not sure I can do it this year, going in the next year, but I will be unsuccessful with my board if I produce a budget for them that is not less. And it's going to take a lot of work, because we already cut the easy things out. There might be some things that we can do move forward, but it's my goal to continue to, and that's a very small piece of our budget, okay? This is our actual budget that I'm talking about is $6 to $7 million. But that's one I can control. And so we understand the need to be efficient in today's times, so we will continue to push to reduce that. One example in the IT services is definitely one that was mentioned. I did not have the right staff. Put a lot of effort in to get the right staff. And working with Kevin, because Kevin was not getting the services that he needed. We made major changes there. And next year in that budget, so this is a reduction for next budget that will be there, we're going to go from 5 to 4 employees in IT. So right now we only have 4. So we made a change last year, which is still in the budget, but we're going to reduce the budget and remove that position. So our goal is to reduce budgets to effectively provide the best value that we can in the times that we are. So I just wanted to share that with you. So if there's any questions for Mike and I, we'll be more glad to answer them.
Any questions? Like, these are the brain trust over at PMPA.
I'd like a copy of the slideshow.
I have it.
Okay. We'll make sure we get those to you. Thank you.
The slide with the plus minus 10% for the 10 members, where do we fall in that category?
I can get that for you. You're right there in that pack.
And I'm also curious how that's determined. And is that negotiated? Is that...
Well, the way the rate is created definitely was negotiated. And so what causes our cost to a member to be different is how your load functions. So honestly, if you have what I call a strong load factor, where it means that, you know, across the 24-hour period, you use very similar amounts, your costs are going to be lower for us because it's cheaper for us when you have a strong load factor. Cities that have bad load factors, that's why in that chart they fall where they are. So some of that's negotiated in the rate, but a lot of it is the function of how you operate your utility. And so if I have to secure 5 megawatts of capacity for you, but you only use 2 megawatts of it at times, your costs are higher. So load factors have a lot to do with that. There is some negotiations in the rate, of course. Currently, we've not had a change in the rate, as you see, for a long time. But we can provide that to Kevin. We've provided it before. It is out there. You can see what the costs are from us. I can't remember where you're at in that pack. I mean,
PMPA has one rate. So, and like Andy said, it's just how you use that. It's just your total dollars divided by the total kilowatt hours.
Yep.
And that's how we look at the top 10% or the plus or minus 10%.
So essentially it's controlled by us. With what our infrastructure on how is?
Well, I think a lot of it's that. So if you have a more up-to-date system that has stronger load factors, so it's more than just your system, it's also how your customers use electricity.
Right.
If you have those going for you, your cost overall would be cheaper. Some of it you can't control, and it's very hard to control how people use their electricity. But can you do upgrades to your system? And Kevin's told me, and I know that they're working on it, they're trying to make those upgrades to make sure the amount of energy that we give to you, you use, and there's not system losses. That has a lot to do with it, too. The rate has a small piece. There is some small levers in there that change it. But in general, really, it is the way your city uses it is the biggest driver of where your costs would fall into that rate. But we can tell you where you fall. And what I would say is that you're within 10% of everyone else. And so when you look at what the other cities charge, the amount you get from us is very similar.
Yeah, our challenge is, like Andy said a minute ago, they allocate 5 megawatts to come to us. Most months we use 2 and some change. So we leave an amount on the table that doesn't always affect us positively.
Right.
It would be better if we used more of what they allocate to us, but we're mostly residential. You know, just think of Ingles is using a lot of electricity all day long because they've got, it's a supermarket, they got to keep those refrigerators running. But in the homes where everybody's been gone all day, those air conditioning units haven't been running as high as they will tonight, which is the same time all across the upstate.
Right.
So those are the types of things that are challenging for us, that there's just not a lot we can do about it. We're mostly a residential load, and we don't use all that has been allocated to us through the years. That has, in my opinion, that drives our cost up.
It's the hardest thing, because we have to pay for the 5 megawatts you may need, whether you use it or not. And then when you don't use it, that causes your cost to be higher. But most of our cities have problems like that. There's no such thing as a perfect load factor. I mean, there is some industries that have great load factors, but we don't have those here really in any of our cities.
Well, that's how my brain's trying to wrap around how do we get closer to that perfect load factor to where we can have savings, because 10% one way or the number, another can be a good sized number. So if there's a way that we can bite a chunk of that off by doing more with the infrastructure or trying to figure out how to, that's a lot to wrap your head around.
I think that's where it is, and you should know that we're taking that into bite-sized chunks, and we're biting it away. You know, we talk about our infrastructure, the lines, the old system we had. If a limb fell on it, it would sit there and it just burn.
Yeah.
Well, when it's burning, you're just throwing energy into the air. Nice. Well, the new system is either going to burn it off or it's going to trip the circuit. So that way it doesn't just sit there for days at a time and just throw energy into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So those are things that Lee and his group are doing. And Richard Tucker is going to come talk to y'all at your workshop next week, and he'll get into some more specifics about what that's doing now. I think we're realizing some savings, which is great, because that means we didn't need a 20% rate increase when we only needed 15, yet we're proposing 5. So we're biting this off as best we can as we go. And I think in a few more years, we'll have a good handle.
Yeah. I would like to note also, too, is what can we ask of our community? You know, because they can play a part in how they do their home, you know, but that education is real important, you know, of working with them. So when someone comes up and says, you know, my power bill's so high, well, let me tell you, these are 3 things you can do. You know what I'm saying? And I think that'd be a great thing.
Yeah, I want to know what those 3 things are.
Right.
That's always through the roof.
Yeah.
Mike did mention that we do have home energy audits available for your customers that are in need of that. So please reach out to Kevin if you want more on that. But customer behavior is part of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably the hardest thing to fix.
Sure it is.
I mean, honestly, what do you do when you come home at night after you've worked? You cook dinner, you start laundry, you run your dishwasher. It's the worst time ever to do those things. And it's really hard to get people to change from that.
Yes.
The other thing I wanted to add at the end is one of the big things we're working with is what does your future power supply look like past 2028? And so there'll be more discussions with Kevin and I on that. We want to be a part of it. At the end of the day, we at least want to make sure you're taking care of it in the future also. So that's a part of it. I think today is more about what's going on today, and any more questions, be more glad. And I do have a copy of the slides. Thank you.
All right, you're
at your last item on your agenda.
Hey, what?
You're at the last item.
Yeah.
You going to make a motion to adjourn?
Motion. Yeah.
Second.
Oh. You got to take the vote.
Oh, okay.
Do you roll call?
Yeah, do roll call.
David?
Yes.
Yep. Aldrin?
Yes.
Adam?
Absolutely
Jimmy?
Not.
Jimmy?
Yes.
All right,
thank you.
I voted in.
Thank you all so much.
Way to go.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm supposed to come right with you.
I just couldn't make it there.